Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. Great to be with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Today is the second day of the month of Nisan. Nisan is the Hebrew month that we've just entered into, and it is a very important, significant month in the Hebrew calendar. So let's start out with yesterday was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Yesterday was the first day of the month of Nisan, and Rosh Chodesh Nisan is a very important day in the calendar of the Jewish people, because it's that day that Hashem chose for the Mishkan, for the sanctuary to be inaugurated. So what happened was, after the Jewish people, get a bit of the perspective over here. The Jewish people come out of Egypt on the 15th of Nisan, which is Pesach, the very first Pesach. And they then 49 days later receive the Torah at Mount Sinai. 40 days later, they sin with the sin of the golden calf. Moses goes up for 40 days, comes back, and then goes up a third time in Rosh Chodesh Nisan and returns on Yom Kippur. And that's how we know Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness for the Jewish people, because Moses returned with the second tablets, the Luchos Shnios. Remember, the first ones he broke at the sin of the golden calf. He then, the day after, Vayakel Moshe, Moshe gathers the people and he instructs them that we have to now build this Mishkan, which is necessary for our connection with God. And the people contribute the materials that are needed, and the craftsmen come together and they build the magnificent Mishkan, the sanctuary for the Jewish people. And they complete the building on the 25th of the day of Kislev, which is actually Hanukkah. And Moses then instructed by God on the 23rd of Adar to start putting together all the pieces, all the parts of the Mishkan. And he completes that job by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the first day of the month of Nisan, so the sanctuary is finally built. And it's on that day that Aaron and his sons are inaugurated as the Kohanim, inaugurated as the priests that will serve in the Mishkan. And a fire descends, Mina Shemaim, from the heavens, and lights up the sacrifices that are brought by Klal Yisrael on that day on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And so there was a day of great holiness and great power for the Jewish people. And each year that day has the potential of renewal and of redemption for the Jewish people. And it's the beginning of the month of Nisan. The word Nisan is from the Babylonian word of Nisim, of miracles. It's a month of miracles for the Jewish people. And the month of Nisan is, and that's why we celebrate on the month of Nisan. It's a celebratory month. It's a month where we don't fast, even if you usually fast. It's a month where we don't say Tachanun throughout the month of Nisan. So such is its beauty, its power, and its strength. And in fact, the Midrash says, Nisan Nigalu, in the month of Nisan, the Jewish people were redeemed. With a Nisan Atidin Ligal, and in Nisan, we will be redeemed in the future again. And the future, in fact, the holy sources say that the future redemption will be even of a greater magnitude than the first redemption in Nisan. So Nisan, of course, we celebrate the redemption of coming out of Egypt, which is Pesach. And please God, next week we'll talk all about the festival of Pesach and the importance of Pesach and why we all must make a great effort in observing Pesach and in telling the story of the Jewish people to the next, to ourselves and to the next generation. So we'll talk about that next week, please God. But Nisan is the time, according to holy tradition, that is most auspicious for the future redemption, for the Geula. According to our holy tradition, so the Jewish people will be redeemed in the future, and we will be able to join together and be united, and it's what's called Kibbutz Galios. God will gather the Jewish people together in the land of Israel, and with the under the leadership of what we call Mashiach, of a great human being who will be a leader who unites all the Jewish people, and he sets up circumstances that everybody can return back to Eretz Israel, and we will have an ingathering of the exiles, and then the Bayis Shlishi, under the leadership of Mashiach, will be rebuilt. There'll be a paraduma, a red heifer, will all be purified ritually, we'll build the Beis HaMikdash, and then the ultimate redemption will take place, which means that the whole world will see the oneness of God, will see the role of the Jewish people, the mission of the Jewish people to serve God, and everybody will work together. There'll be no more war, there'll be no more conflict. All of humanity will join together in a beautiful harmony, and we'll all do what we are supposed to in the service of God, and we will all openly and clearly recognize God. That's what the Messianic era will look like. So according to our tradition, this month, it can happen at any time that Mashiach comes, but this month of Nisan is particularly auspicious for that to take place. And so we feel the great power and importance of the month of Nisan. In fact, Nisan in the Torah is called Chodesh HaAviv, the month of spring. And that's why we, even though we follow the lunar canon like the Muslim religion, but they can have Ramadan at any time because, remember, the lunar calendar is 12 days short of the solar calendar. So you'll lose 12 days every year. So it means that, you know, the year, the festivals will shift around the year. But in Judaism, we have leap years in order to correct that and to make sure that Pesach is always in Nisan, is always Chodesh HaAviv. And Chodesh HaAviv stands for Av Yud Beis. It's the father of the 12. In other words, we count the months from Nisan. We're supposed to count the months from Nisan. So even though our new year is in Tishrei with Rosh Hashanah, but we count the months from Nisan because when we count the months, we always want to remember the Yetzias Mitzrayim, always want to remember the great, powerful experience of coming out of Egypt, which Nisan represents. So we're now in that holy month of Nisan, and please God, it should be a month of Geula, a month of redemption, a month of Yeshua, a month of salvation, a month of Nisim, as the name is Nisan, a month where we see the freedom of our hostages that are held by Hamas, a month where we defeat Hamas and our enemies, and it's important that we do that, and we go into Rafiah and finish off the job and destroy the last four battalions of Hamas, and please God, we will be able to rescue our hostages and bring them home safely to their families. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 High FM.
So yesterday was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Today is the second of Nisan, is the second day of the month of Nisan in the Hebrew calendar. And on this day in 1492, Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand of Spain signed a decree expelling all Jews who refused to convert to Christianity. So that was the beginning of the Spanish Inquisition on this day, the second of Nisan, 1492. Thomas de Torquemada served as the Grand Inquisitor. He was charged with uncovering those who continued to practice Judaism in secret, called conversos. And sometimes they're referred to as Moranos, but that is actually a pejorative term. It actually means pigs in Spanish. So we should not refer to them as Moranos, but rather as conversos, those that converted, but it was a fake conversion to Christianity, and they still observed Judaism secretly. In the ensuing Inquisition, an estimated 32,000 Jews were burned at the stake in elaborate public ceremonies, and another 200,000 Jews were expelled from Spain. So they say that there were about 300,000 to 400,000 Jews in Spain, and half of them converted to Christianity, but most of those were conversos and still practiced their Judaism in secret, and the other half chose to leave. At the times, Jews held many prominent positions in Spain. For example, Rabbi Don Isaac Abarbanel, who served as finance minister, and was one of the most powerful men in Spain, he reportedly offered Queen Isabella the astronomical sum of 600,000 crowns to revoke the edict. The Abarbanel was unable to prevent the expulsion and the Spanish Inquisition from taking place, and he too was exiled with round about 200,000 of his brethren that decided to leave and not to convert to Christianity. So that's today in the year 1492. And amazingly, Christopher Columbus, who had Jewish roots, and in fact today they say that at least half of the Spanish population has Jewish blood, which comes from the 200,000 Jews that secretly converted to Christianity. So Christopher Columbus, he writes in his logbook that he couldn't leave the port on this day in 1492. And remember, he went on that voyage that would change the world and he discovered the Americas. He said he couldn't leave because the port was so full and was so clogged up with Jews leaving on the date of when they had to. Sorry, the deadline was Tisha B'Av. So the beginning of the edict was signed on this day, 1492. Deadline was Tisha B'Av, and he wanted to leave that day, and he couldn't because there was such chaos in the ports, all the Jews leaving Spain and fleeing rather than being forced to convert to Christianity. Okay, so that's today, 2nd of Nisan, 1492. Tomorrow is the 3rd of Nisan, and tomorrow is the anniversary of the Nazi children's action in the Kovno ghetto in 1944. So tomorrow, the 3rd of Nisan 1944, the Nazis perpetrated what they called the children's action. And that day, which is tomorrow and Thursday, the Nazi soldiers, it's exactly 80 years tomorrow and Thursday, since the Nazi soldiers conducted house-to-house searches to round up children under the age of 12 and adults over the age of 55, and they sent them to their deaths in the Ninth Fort in Kovno. I've been there to the Ninth Fort. I've been to the place where the Kovno ghetto was. It really is one of the saddest places in the history of the Jewish people, where so many Jews were murdered by the Nazis. Eventually, the Germans blew up every house with grenades and dynamite on suspicion that Jews might be hiding in the underground bunkers. They then poured gasoline over much of the former ghetto and incinerated the entire ghetto. Over 37,000 Jews in Kovno before the Holocaust was the population. Of that 37,000, less than 10% survived. One of the survivors was Rabbi Ephraim Oshry, who later published a stirring collection of rabbinical responsa detailing his life and death decisions during the Holocaust. He's also written the book of The Annihilation of Lithuanian Jewry. It's an absolutely brilliant book. I recommend it. And he describes, he goes through every shtetl in Lithuania, what their population was before the Holocaust, what happened to them during the Holocaust, how they were murdered, and then their population after the Holocaust. It's really a worthwhile read, The Annihilation of Lithuanian Jewry. And in the first part of the book, he goes in great detail about the Kovno ghetto, about life in the Kovno ghetto, about many of these life and death shilas, questions that came to him that he had to deal with, and about how he survived unbelievably hiding underneath in these secret tunnels that they had dug, that they were like tunnels under tunnels. So the Nazis came in, they found one tunnel, thought nobody was there, but then they were in another tunnel. And even though the Nazis burnt the ghetto down, how these people, a number of them, survived under the most brutal conditions. It really is a powerful depiction of the tragedy of the Holocaust, of the atrocities of the Holocaust. So that's exactly tomorrow, 80 years since the destruction of the Kovno ghetto and the many thousands that were killed in Kovno in the Holocaust. Okay, fine. So let's just mention one more, and that is on the 4th of Nisan, which is on Friday, in 1948, the 4th of Nisan, a convoy of 78 Jewish medical personnel en route to Hadassah Hospital in the Jewish enclave of Mount Scopus in Jerusalem were killed in an Arab ambush. The ambush cut off the hospital from the rest of Israel and forced Hadassah to relocate, eventually opening a larger medical center in 1961 in Ein Kerem. The Mount Scopus facility would reopen after Jerusalem was reunited in 1967. So on the 4th of Nisan, which is Friday, it's the anniversary of the murder of 78 medical personnel who were trying to get to the Hadassah Hospital because there was that siege that was laid by the Arabs in 1948 to split Jerusalem and prevent those that were in the eastern part of Jerusalem to have weapons and to have medical care and to have food, which was one of the great tragedies of the War of Independence of 1948. Okay, great. So let's carry on. What I wanted to mention to you now was a very interesting insight into the Torah reading this week. This Shabbos we read Parshas Tazria. Usually Tazria and Metzora are together, but this year being a leap year, so they're two separate Parshas. And Tazria and Metzora deal with a very interesting condition that would took place to people in ancient times. No longer takes place and happens anymore. And that is when people were engaged in Lashon Hara, they would develop this rash on their skin called tsaras. And they would have to do tshuva, they'd have to do the kohen, and the kohen would instruct them on a process of rehabilitation and of what we call atonement of kapora, and then they would be over this rash on their skin called tsaras. And there's a very famous midrash in this week's parsha. The midrash says that Rav Yanai, who was one of the great Tanaim, he was once in the marketplace of Tzipori, and a certain peddler, a certain tradesman, salesman, peddler, shouted out in the marketplace, "Who wants the elixir of life? Who wants to buy an elixir that will guarantee a person a long life?" So such a dramatic statement, a number of people gathered around this individual, including Reb Yana. And this man said, "I don't have any potion to sell you, but I have advice to give you." And he quoted the famous pasuk from Psalms, Lamadalatinin Lamadal, which we actually say on Shabbos morning, Pesukat Zibra. And the pasuk says, "Mi ha'ish ha'chofetz chaim, ohev yamim liros tov." Who is the person who desires life, who loves days to see good? And the famous conclusion of that pasuk of David HaMelech, "Natzul l'shoncha meira, usfasecha medaber mirma." You should guard your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from speaking deceitfully. So this peddler said that if you want the key to a long life, you should follow the advice of King David and not speak Lashon Hara. That's a very famous pasuk and a very famous incident. And Rav Yanai said that when he heard this peddler say, give this this advice to everybody, he had been saying that pasuk for many, many years. He had seen that pasuk, but now he truly understood what that pasuk means. Of the pasuk of Mi Eshachovetz Chaim, Oiv Liyamim Liras Tov, Letzur Loshon Chameras Fasech Mata Mirma. So only then, Rav Yanai said, he understood what that pasuk truly meant. So that's a big shaila, it's a big question, because Rav Yanai was a Tana, he was a very great person. And he obviously understood the basic pshat of that pasuk, that if we, Hashem promises us that if we guard our tongues from speaking Lashon Hara, so we will be given a long life. That seems to be the simple understanding and interpretation of the pasuk. So what's the chiddush that Rabbi Yanai was so moved by when you heard this particular individual, this peddler, stating this verse? And the answer, it's a beautiful answer that Rav Nissen Alpert gives. He was the Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. And he says, it's a little bit difficult not to see the pasuk in front of you, but I'll try and describe it as best I can. He said, usually we see that there's a question and an answer in this pasuk. The question is, Mi ha'ish ha'chofetz chaim, ohev yamim liratov. Who's the one who loves life and loves days to see good? Is the one who will not nutzul lashon chamera, who will no longer speak lashon hara. Right? That is the simple understanding of the question and the answer. But Rav Nissen Alpert said, Rav Yanai realized when this person was speaking in the marketplace that that's not the correct way to punctuate the pasuk. The correct punctuation is you put the question mark after Mi Ha'isha Chofetz Chaim, question mark. Who is the one who loves life? That's the question. The answer is Oev Yamim Liras Tov. So that's all part of the answer. That we say Oev Yamim Liras Tov is the answer of not speaking Lashon Hara, which is such a beautiful interpretation and explanation. In other words, we always thought, obviously, the advice here is not to speak Lashon Hara and then you'll have a long life. But it's a lot more than that. What David HaMelech is saying over here is that how do we live a life not speaking Lashon Hara? How do we stop ourselves speaking Lashon Hara? In other words, that's a very hard thing, isn't it? You know, it's one of the most difficult commandments in the Torah. It's one of the most challenging tests for a believing Jew to observe in their life is not to speak Lashon Hara, not to speak in the derogatory way about somebody. Very, very difficult. That's something that comes up every day, many, many times a day in all of our lives. So how is it that we can prevent ourselves from not speaking Lashon Hara? And so that is the advice of King David over here. The advice is, Ohev Yamim Liras Tov, love days and see good. That's how we will be led to Nitzul Lashon Chameras Vasechem Adam Mirba. If we see good around us and we are train our eye to see things in a positive way rather than in a negative way, so that's the key to not speaking Lashon Hara, to seeing the good around us and the good in others. There's an old English expression called a jaundiced eye that I don't think is used so much anymore today, but it means a person sees the negative, sees the downside, sees the weakness, sees the faults, sees the glass is half empty. And then if that is our mindset and attitude, then we very naturally will fall into the trap of Lashon Hara. But if we see things with a positive spin, not to be naive and not to wear rosy glasses and live in the clouds and not be attached to reality, to very much be with our feet on the ground, but to see the good and to see the positive and to give benefit of the doubt. That's the advice over here. Of Ohev Yamim Liras Tov, love days and see good, love life, see the good around you, and that will lead you to an existence of Nitzul Lashon Chameras Tzvasecha Medaber Mirma. And that, the great example of that, of course, is with the Meraglim, the spies. Remember, the spies went into the land of Israel, and the spies were, they saw a lot of negativity in the land. They were sent by Moses after we received the Torah and we were arrived at the land of Israel. They went in and they spied the land and they had a very negative view of what they saw in the land. And as a result, the consequence of that was that they were given the punishment of having to be 40 years wandering in the desert. And it actually says Yom Lashana, Yom Lashana. They were there in the land for 40 days. And because they gave a bad report, they would have to now be in the desert for 40 years. But the question is, they didn't speak Lashon Hara for 40 days. They spoke Lashon Hara for a few minutes. When they came back that night, it was actually Tisha B'Av, they gave a negative, dark, pessimistic report. But that was only lasted 15, 20 minutes. But the punishment was Yom Lashana, just like they were in the land for 40 days, so they would have 40 years, a year for a day. Why is that? Because while they were in the land, they viewed it with a negative eye. They only saw negative things and dark things, and that led them to Lashon Hara. So, for example, our sages teach us that they saw people were dying all the time. So they said it's a land that consumes its inhabitants. So they saw it from a negative point of view. But really the truth is Hashem made a lot of people die in those 40 days in order that the population would be distracted and would be consumed with burying their dead and with mourning. And they wouldn't notice these 12 strangers that were now wandering around the land. So instead of them seeing a positive part of that, to having a positive spin on those events, they viewed it in a negative way. And so the lesson is that the propensity and the likelihood of us speaking Lashon Hara emanates from a negative view, from seeing the world in a negative way. But if we're able to change that attitude, that's the chiddush over here. We're able to change that attitude and to oyev yamim liras tov, to love life and to see good around us, so then we will be able to netzul lashon chameras fasechem et avayim rav. So that's the chiddush that Rav Yanai received from this individual in the marketplace when he quoted that pasuk, and that's such a beautiful life lesson for all of us, to try and be positive people, to try and see the good in our situations and in the people around us, and as a result, the consequence being to give benefit of the doubt and not to speak in a negative and derogatory way about others. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
We see also in this week's Torah reading, Parshas Tazria, that the Torah commands us that after a woman gives birth to a child, so she would have to bring a korban, bring a sacrifice in appreciation to God for the great miracle of the birth of their child. And as we all know, childbirth is just one of the most incredible phenomenons that exist in God's world that God created. To see the emergence of a child from a mother, and this little child that was underwater and developing in the amniotic fluid, and now it comes out and takes its first breath and has all the necessary ingredients to be a functioning human being. It's just an unbelievable, miraculous, bizarre thing that this creature now emerges that was created by the mother and father and God, and now the child emerges into this world and develops it. It really is breathtaking and miraculous. And as a response to that miracle, so a mother should bring a korban, an offering to Hashem. And part of that offering, the Torah says, is a ben yona or tur. A ben yona is a young dove, and a tur is a turtle dove. So a turtle dove is also, they're all part of the pigeon family. So either a young dove or a turtle dove needs to be brought. Now, usually in the Torah, by the way, these are the only kosher birds that can be brought as an offering. There are other kosher birds, like a chicken is kosher and a turkey is kosher, but they can't be brought as an offering. The only birds that we bring up as an offering are a young dove or a turtle dove. Now, usually the Baal HaTorim points out that usually in the Torah, when the bird offerings are quoted, so usually the Tor comes before the Ben Yon. I'm going to read to you the Baal HaTorim inside. So it's chapter 12, verse 6 of Vayikra, of Leviticus. The Baal HaTorim says, "Bechol makom makdim turim libnei yona chutz mikan," where everywhere else in the Torah, where bird sacrifices are mentioned, it's always the tur comes before the ben yona. L'fi she'eino mevi ela echad v'mimtza yona lo tikach tur. But over here, the order is reversed, because over here, when the woman brings a offering, it only has to be either or, either a ben yona or a tur. And since it only has to be either or, the ben yona is mentioned first, which changes the order and everywhere else. Why? Lefi sheben zugo mit abel alav ve'enu mizdaveg la'acher. Because the Baal HaTorim says that the turtle dove is a bird that mates, and it stays loyal to its mate throughout its life. And not only that, but even if its mate dies, it doesn't mate again. It remains alone. And since that is the case, so the ben yona, which is a young dove and hasn't yet found a mate, rather bring the ben yona. You only have to bring one, either a ben yona or a tor, which is a turtle dove. But so usually the tor is always mentioned first, is more prestigious, so to speak. But in this case, only the Benyona is mentioned before the Torah because the Benyona hasn't yet found a mate, and the Torah, the Tizzle Dove, has found a mate. And if that mate is now brought as a sacrifice, so its partner will be left alone, and its partner now won't find another partner. And out of compassion and out of awareness of that, rather bring the Ben Yonah if possible, which is an amazing idea. And Rav Simchel Zissel Brody, I heard this from Rabbi Friend, he says a very interesting thing. Rav Simchel Zissel Brody says that he says something fascinating, that we see from here how the Torah emphasizes the importance of loyalty, how this value of loyalty is something that's very important and something that is given emphasis by the Torah. And therefore, that's why the Torah says, bring the Ben Yonah before you bring the Torah, the turtle dove. And I think it's an important message that we should emphasize and talk about. You know, certainly we see an amazing thing. After Aaron and Miriam spoke Loshon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, they only had good intentions, but they were critical of Moshe Rabbeinu. As a result, Miriam got tzaras, and the nation had to wait for her, just like she waited for Moshe. And Hashem, when he was rebuking Aaron and Miriam for that mistake that they made, he said a number of things. He said that Moshe is the only person who speaks to me pair our pair, a double bar. He speaks to me mouth to mouth. No other person could do that or has ever been able to do that in the history of the world. And he says a tremendous compliment of Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, "B'chol beisi ne'emanhu," that in all of my household, he is the faithful one. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who is faithful. So we see of all the amazing attributes that Moses had, God emphasizes that he was loyal and he was faithful. And we see again, says Rav Simchel Zissel Brody over here, the Chevron Rosh Hashiva, that the rather bring the Benyona than the Torah, because the Benyona, they have loyalty to one another. They're mate together. And that is something that we should think about. I think in a world where which is fast moving and which is quite superficial and which people tend to look out for themselves and their own interests, God values this quality of loyalty. And when we're loyal to our spouse, to somebody that we've chosen to spend the rest of our lives with, and there's no relationship like a marriage, and we don't grow in any other relationship in our life like we do in a marriage. And that's why the Torah commands us to get married, because it's a platform in which we can grow. And when we live a life of loyalty to our spouse, and our spouse is not perfect, and we are not perfect, but we learn to tolerate each other, and we learn to support each other, and together we face the challenges and the tribulations and the vicissitudes of life that come our way, and we try and hold each other and support each other and build each other and face the world together. And as a result of developing this quality of loyalty, it's a tremendous growth for a human being. And so God appreciates loyalty. He appreciates when we're loyal to our spouse. God appreciates when we're loyal to our family. God appreciates when we're loyal to our community. God appreciates when we're loyal to our people. And of course, God appreciates when we're loyal to God, and when we're loyal to the Torah and to the mitzvahs and to the commandments that he gave us. That's something we should all work on. And especially now in these days, the times that we're going through, and we see the true color of the world comes to the fore, and the treatment of Israel and of Jewish people around the world shows us where we stand. And it's quite, I think, all of us, every Jew in all corners of the globe will acknowledge that it's been a very shocking time since October 7th, and to see the response of the world and to see how the world has turned on us, to see how the United Nations and United States and the European nations and, of course, the Middle East nations, how a terrible bias is applied to Israel and to all of the Jewish people, and how a double standard is focused upon us, and how we are accused of a genocide, which is very inaccurate and inflammatory and something that is completely unfair and a blood libel. We're accused of genocide. We're accused of famine. We're accused of targeting civilians. None of those are true. They're all very far from the truth. The extent that the Israeli army has gone to avoid civilian casualties, despite what you hear on CNN and SABC, is quite remarkable. And the numbers are almost, it's actually a little bit better than one combatant and one civilian. So in other words, more combatants have been killed than civilians. Those are the accurate statistics, not what you hear in the mainstream media around the world, the liberal mainstream media. And Israel is not, in the history of conflict, of armed conflict, there's never been such a successful and executed ability and not to target civilians. Even though Hamas hide behind their civilians deliberately in order to have what they call the CNN effect, so that all the photos of those civilians are shown around the world, Israel's accused of genocide. Israel goes to great lengths to avoid civilian casualties. There are a number of civilian casualties, which is a great tragedy of war and very regrettable, and Israel is not interested in harming civilians, contrary to popular belief. But even so, Israel has been very successful at minimizing civilian casualties in their necessity to destroy Hamas. And please God, they'll be successful in destroying Hamas. They're going to go into Rafah and they'll clean out the last four battalions, and they'll do their best to avoid civilian casualties, even though Hamas hide in schools and in hospitals and in mosques. And please God, they should be successful. But the Jewish people need to hold together. We need to be loyal to the Jewish people. Don't sell your people short. And because of your politically correct stance and the short-term benefit of being praised by the liberal world that you're calling out on Israel's atrocities, be loyal to the Jewish people. Be loyal to your community. Be loyal to God. And the truth will come out. And those that were not loyal, they will suffer terribly, both in this world and in the next. And those that are loyal will be rewarded greatly in this world and in the next world. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So as we mentioned, this is the month of Nisan. It's the month of redemption. Please God, we should see a month of miracles on behalf of the Jewish people. And we should see the Geula, the redemption of all of Klal Yisrael, of all the Jewish people from the four corners of the globe returning home to the land of Israel. And it should be a month of personal redemption and national redemption. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.